Welcome back, everybody, to another edition, the first edition of 2019 of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. Of course, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter, where you can go for all your Wisconsin Badgers news, notes, and analysis. And I am Jake Kokorowski. We got the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski, here. And, of course, from Bucky's Fifth Quarter, you have Owen Reese. He's joining us, too, because we got a big show coming up. We're going to hit it right off. Talking a little bit later in the show, Wisconsin Badgers wrapping up their football season. Basketball, they're number 22 in the latest AP poll after that loss at Western Kentucky, which is a rough one. But we'll get into more Wisconsin Badger football talk, just the end of the season, what's ahead, the new signees. Do that a little later. But I was going to say, with the Green Bay Packers, not the best way to end their 2018 season. This past Sunday, a rough one, and they fell to the Detroit Lions and it was not a fun loss and fun game to watch. I had people over, by the way, and that was not a we went into conversation very quickly once the game got ugly. But Scotty, how you doing, brother? Happy New Year. And just not the best way to end on that note after a comeback win against the Jets a week earlier.
By the way, Happy New Year to you. I'm doing about as well as I can be. Kind of getting through some illnesses we had running around our house. But otherwise, it was a great New Year. Not really a great end of the season, though, for the Green Bay Packers, as you mentioned. I mean, I feel like inspired or uninspired, is to use that word, would be an insult to uninspired people all over the world, because they certainly looked unprepared and like they just didn't want to be there. And it begs the question then, you know, I understand that Aaron Rodgers wanted to play the last two games of the year and would have finished the game against Detroit had he not suffered a concussion. But it really, if you were going to come out that unwilling to want to play, then why did you even bother to play everybody against the Jets? Because they could have, instead of having a 12 pick, had they lost the Jets, and I'm not advocating, professional athletes would never try to lose a game. They shouldn't, right? But if they would have lost that game, you're looking at possibly a number 7 pick in the draft, right? Maybe an 8. That being said, yeah, it was just really, people do have made some hyperbolic statements and said, well, this reminds me of the 80s and 70s all over again. And not really. They're not that bad. I mean, there's a lot of pieces on this team that I still think you can build around with good, smart free agent picks and some health would be nice. But that game in a microcosm really did remind me of some of the worst Packer football I've ever seen.
Owen, what are your thoughts about that game before we go on to kind of a more broader topic about what's ahead with coaching searches and who to pick with that number 12 pick overall? Or, you know, I know depending on what the Saints do in the playoffs, you know, if they could even ship that pick plus that other first round pick for something higher. We'll get into that a little bit later. But just you're a former football player. What did you see in that game if you had a chance to watch it? Just what stood out to you?
I don't know, man. I don't know if unprepared would really be the way. It really looked like a team that was really beat up and was really on its last legs to begin with, that really had nothing to play for. Was kind of how it looked to me. I don't know if I don't know if uninspired or unprepared was really the way to do it, but definitely, like I said, a team that I think they started like 3 of their original opening day starters on defense. And Aaron Rodgers, outside of the Jets game, really hasn't been that demonstrative, fiery type of guy that the fans seem to want him to be. And I think that was one of those things where I think he had fully intended on playing. But obviously the second that there was any hint of any type of injury, there's no incentive to having him play. So, I don't think that I appreciate that Aaron Rodgers felt the need to like want to play and be the leader and whatever. There was really no reason for him to be playing. But I don't know. That's obviously their decision and they can do what they want. But I guess that was my general impression. Was I don't think it was like, I don't think the team didn't care. Or I don't think the team was unprepared or whatever. Simply a team that was really depleted, I guess, and really didn't have much to play for. While Detroit, I guess arguably probably was, in the same boat. Right. But yeah, definitely Detroit definitely came out more motivated, I guess. And the game wasn't very competitive. I clearly, like, obviously it's a tough line between like advocating for professional athletes to lose. But objectively seeing that the future is better with the result of a loss is always one of those things. I was kind of pleasantly surprised. I thought for a second that they were going to beat the Bears, but then kind of realized too, like, oh, a miraculous comeback that falls just short is just about perfect for where they're looking to go or where what's best for them to do. So at that point, the season was already over. So looking forward to draft season.
Yeah,
I know. I was gonna say you're good at it too. Oh, and yeah, obviously you're an NFL draft scout. Like a draft scout, you're going down to the Senior Bowl coming up in couple weeks, right? For that matter. Yeah, I was gonna say, Scotty, what? Go ahead, brother.
I was gonna kind of echo some of those sentiments. I mean, looking forward to this off season because it's gonna be, in some ways, one of the more important off seasons probably in the last two decades. And you talk about players who probably won't be here, which will free up some money to do some things in free agency. They can't go crazy, but I think they can be smart and find some value players that are going to add to some of the depth. And they've got some draft picks to work with, and they really got to kind of hit on this draft. I mean, plus, again, the injuries, which seem to always – I feel like we talk about injuries, just about every year about with the Packers. But if they can get – stay a little healthier at key positions next year with a new draft class, with some of the good young players taking that next step up, like Alexander going into his second year and some of the other players on there, I still think this team could be a playoff team. Now, do I think they can win the division? It's too early to tell. The Bears look like – they're going to sit up at the top of the roost for at least a couple of years. They've got a good young defense, and they've got Mac locked up for a few years. But the Packers could be a playoff team just as quickly as this season went south. They could come back and be 10-6 next year, 11-5. But again, I think it's important. And I think to overshadowing all of that, we talk about the draft, talk about free agency, they've got to find a coach. They've got to place a head coach. They've got to find somebody to lead the charges as we move into 2019. So I think there's so many moving parts that we haven't seen an offseason like this in quite some time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess, when looking at those pieces, let's start with head coaching. Let's talk with you're seeing the reports. Owen, we'll ask you first, and Scotty, after Owen chimes in, feel free to give your thoughts. But who from the list of candidates that are slated to interview or have interviewed or will be interviewed? Which one stands out to you, and which one do you think is the best fit for Green Bay right now?
I think two of them in particular really stick out. One, I'll go with the lesser thought of one first. Matt LaFleur is the offensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans, and is, I guess, for lack of a better term, kind of like the student under the mentor that would be either Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan. He was the offensive coordinator in the Los Angeles Rams last year, but he did not call plays. But he was Matt Ryan's quarterback's coach when he won the MVP in 2016. And really employs a very similar system to McVay and Shanahan, really kind of a West Coast stretch zone type scheme, which I think is both a good fit for what the Packers have right now, as well as really just it's the Packers a lot of time, or I guess over the last few seasons, they haven't really had an identity. To me, their identity has been, we have Aaron Rodgers. And while that's cool, I'm a firm believer in that your offensive philosophy needs to be an identity. And I really don't know if I could tangibly tell you what the Packers has over the past few years. So excuse me, LaFleur is one that is kind of, he's not not under the radar, but he's definitely not one of the headline guys. But I think the biggest one for me, and I don't have a super strong opinion on this or super well-developed, well-researched take on this, but Josh McDaniels would be my pick. And that may seem obvious, but there's a couple things for me that really strike a chord. One, in my experience, coaches that have gone somewhere early and screwed up typically don't make the same mistakes again. I'm not saying he'll be a great head coach, but I'm saying that I doubt that he'll make the same mistakes that he made in Denver. He was like 32 years old and was extremely maybe brazen, for lack of a better term, but that. And then I think he's got one trump card. I think that he's got that few other potential coaches in this available this offseason that can really trump it, I think, is I think for as much good as he does, I think it's a fairly fair statement that Aaron Rodgers isn't a typical quarterback to coach or to attempt to manage. And I think that McDaniels, as closely as he's worked with Brady over the past 10 years or so, however much it's been, while it's not an apples to apples comparison, I think that's an extremely important dynamic. I know Eric Stoner always used to say that your team takes on the personality of either its head coach or its quarterback. And while I don't know if taking on the personality of Aaron Rodgers would be the worst thing, I think someone that can either maybe not corral or contain, but at least has some experience with an alpha personality like that, a very strong, very highly intelligent player that I guess for better or worse was known for kind of challenging or questioning Mike McCarthy's play calling and offensive philosophy and stuff. I think it doesn't need to be someone that needs to come in and put his foot down and say, no, Aaron, you're going to listen to me. And it doesn't need to be somebody that needs to be completely submissive at the same time and say, no, Aaron, like, I'm just here and we're going to run the scheme, but you know, it's all up to you. But there needs to be a middle ground there. And I think that that's something that McDaniels at the very least has a good amount of experience with, dealing with a quarterback in Tom Brady that's both been outspoken at times, as well as just simply the ego or the reputation, with intentional or not, is there. And I think that's a quality that McDaniels has that not many other guys in this potential coaching search have. So I think that's something, whether I'm right or wrong, I think that's an intangible that I would be looking for. And that's kind of what attracts me to Josh McDaniels.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I think McDaniels is the favorite, so I'm not going to go too far down that road. I also know, I think that he's learned from, you know, much like Pete Carroll his first time around, a lot of coaches have learned from some of their mistakes. The other thing that's interesting is people talk about what happened last year in Indianapolis, and I really believe there's a lot more to the story than we're hearing. And I think that in some cases, McDaniels took the high road and didn't want to, you know, discuss how weird the Irsay family can be. I think that the other guys I like that I think are intriguing, staying with the same team. If you're thinking defense, maybe Flores is the guy. I also am interested to see how Carmichael, the offensive coordinator with the Saints, interviews, because again, he's a quiet guy. I mean, there's people I know who cover that team that say that, you know, they've been on the beat for 3 years sometimes, and they've never heard him say more than 10 words. But yet, he's an interesting candidate. But I still think if I had to put chips down in Vegas, I think that it would be Josh McDaniels who's going to be the guy who gets the job.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking, and Scotty, we'll go with you too on this, you know, leading off with it, you know, we talk about that head coach and how that shapes the organization, or obviously the culture of the program too. But, you know, looking at the players and the roster, and obviously there needs to be some influx of talent. You know, where does it start, in your opinion? Where does it start? Does it start at outside linebacker with the draft? What are the names that you would want to see? You know, I know it's way too early right now. You're not even through the first week of the NFL playoffs. But like, what stands out to you about positions in need, or any particular players that you think could help this squad?
Well, I mean, I don't have a specific right now because I haven't started breaking down, you know, where that mock draft looks. But they need a pass rusher first. I mean, whether it's an outside linebacker or whether it's a defensive end, they need a disruptive force. They need somebody who's going to, because, again, you talk about the secondary, and I think they've got some good young pieces in the secondary. But, man, a good pass rush, a lot of holes you have in your secondary. And they don't have that right now. And they haven't had that for the last couple of years. Clay Matthews certainly wasn't the force the last few years that he was early in his career. And some other guys that they had hoped would be that just haven't panned out. So by hook or by crook, and even though I sat here and defended the drafting of King and passing on TJ Watt, just because I understood the hole they had in that secondary, man, oh man, does that look like the wrong choice as you continue to get further and further away. And you look at the force that kid's been in 2 years with the Steelers. So whatever it is, I mean, you can't go back in time. There's no time machine. You can't get in a DeLorean and go fix it. But what you got to do is address it. And you need to get some guys that are going to get after quarterbacks, make quarterbacks have to, you know, make decisions that they regret later on. And then that's going to help everything. It's going to help your secondary. It's going to help any holes you think you have. And it's just going to make this defense better and get them off the field. So that's the number one thing. The number two need is they need some depth and maybe some upgrades on the offensive line. Bakhtiari is amazing, and I still think he's a Pro Bowl caliber guy. I think Lindsey's a good center. I think Bulaga and the injuries have kind of worn him down, and they just need better play at the guard position. And they need some depth. They need to be able to plug guys in that are going to keep Aaron Rodgers upright and keep him from getting hit and keep him from getting hurt. So I think those are your two needs. And whether you address those in the draft, you address those in free agency, those are the two things this team is going to need. And if they get those things, I think with their young receiving core that's going to only get better, with, you know, their young cornerbacks that when they're healthy look like they could be dynamic, with some young running backs that look like they can be game changers, they've got some pieces. I think the last piece, the third piece, is, you know, some depth at the tight end position, some guys that could be playmakers. But, you know, those are, I think, coming into it. And then, you know, at other positions, you know, on the D-line and inside linebacker, depth is always the key at those spots. You can never have enough defensive linemen as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, it's certainly a large enough shopping list for them to go try to take care of some of the needs they have.
I mean, I was going to say, Owen, man, you're the draft expert for us. You're going to be working with Cheesehead TV on for their annual draft guide. You'll be working with the interior lineman, you told me, which is going to be great and right up your alley, that for that matter. But what do you think, where do you think Wisconsin go, or not Wisconsin, Green Bay goes with that pick? Do you feel they even have a chance to move up? And I mean, who should they target in that draft from those who have declared already?
Well, I think there's a couple of things, different ways they can go here. I'm not a huge fan of trading up, because simply I don't think they're going to get. So to me right now, with the way this class is starting to kind of get put together, there's not the huge amount of quarterbacks that teams in that 12 range where the Packers are would traditionally love. Like if the Packers had picked 12th last year, right? Which obviously they were 14th and traded back and then traded back up. But so if you were last year, you're looking and you said, okay, Darnold's going to go, Rosen's going to go, and Baker Mayfield's going to go at least, right? So it's three guys. So potentially you should get a top nine position player at 12, right? There are very few quarterbacks still that you've either – Justin Herbert said he's coming back to Oregon. I would presume that Dwayne Haskins will declare. He hasn't made a formal announcement yet, so we'll kind of see how that goes. But unless these NFL teams really talk themselves into like a Drew Lock from Missouri or Daniel Jones from Duke, who, and I guess to my liking, are probably in that 20 to 32 range of a prospect, or where they would be worth taking a look preliminarily, they're not. The Packers aren't going to be able to get high enough to get to a guy that would be worth going up to get, if that makes sense. I think to me, there's only a couple guys in this class that are really would be worth doing that. Nick Bosa being one of them, the rusher from Ohio State, the younger brother of Joey, who's a stud with the Chargers. And then Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama, is an absolute monster, and he's only going to continue to get better. It absolutely floored me. I didn't know, but when they had the video of him talking and he like caught himself before he said anything about Kyler Murray, the kid has braces, man. He's like 20 years old. He's only going to continue to get better. Easy for me to say. So I don't think they're going to be able to get high enough to go to get those guys. So I'm not a fan in this scenario of them of pairing picks together. I think the team that kind of they remind me of right now are the New Orleans Saints of 2 years ago. So the Saints had I believe it was the 11th pick where they took Marshawn Lattimore. They had the last pick in the first round where they took Ryan Ramczyk. And then a couple other picks on day two, later in day two. And that's kind of where the Packers are at right now. And they're in that position where they can take a stud up top. They can take a really safe, quote unquote, luxury pick like Ryan Ramczyk was to the Saints, a guy they didn't really need, but ended up needing once their starting right tackle got hurt immediately. It was a good thing that they had taken him. So I think the first place I would go is with that top pick. I think you're in the second tier edge rusher territory. I think you're Ja'Kai Polite, who's like 6'3", 250, 245 from Florida. He had a big strip sack in their bowl game against Michigan. Ja'Kai Polite should be there. Josh Allen from Kentucky, I think, is going to blow up this process a bit, but he could be in that area. Them or a Clelin Ferrell from Clemson, kind of one of those things where you've got three or four edge rushers in that top pick, and it's going to be the time of the year on Twitter where there's going to be about 35 guys that there's no way they're going to get to 20. So someone will fall. I think edge rusher is probably the way to go there. The only way I would really advocate it for trading up is say they're at 12 and say Ferrell and Allen and Bosa are all gone before 8 or 9. And they're really afraid that Ja'Kai Polite isn't going to be there or that one of the other pass rushers they really want is there. I trading up to 9 or 8 would maybe make sense. But even still, I'm really not a fan with where this roster is at right now, giving up day two picks or future picks even to do that. I think the second first round pick is an excellent territory again for the best offensive lineman available. And it's still to be seen with Brian Gutekunst how this will work. They only took one lineman last year. He was a former college tackle, which is kind of the Packers' MO. For those unfamiliar, they've taken two non-collegiate tackles since Ted Thompson took over in 2004, one of them being Corey Linsley. So the Packers do not draft non-tackles. So I'm curious to see how that goes. Chris Lindstrom, from Boston College could be a guy that's in that area late first round. A Dalton Reisner from Kansas State, or a name that Badger fans are aware of, depending on how he tests. A Michael Dieter or David Edwards could both be around in that 30 to 35 range. Both would be advantageous. Again, in the case of Dieter, he's a guard, which I agree with Scotty that the guard is a huge issue for the Packers. It doesn't get brought up a ton, but they could really use some improvements inside. And then someone like David Edwards, who's a tackle, who could eventually take over for Brian Bulaga, perhaps, and be what they hoped Jason Spriggs would be. So I think that's kind of where you go there. I know we talked about free agency just very briefly, and I'll cut off here in a second. Two edge guys I would very much consider. I don't know if the Packers will, but I would very much consider going after in free agency that shouldn't be super expensive, but would be worth kicking the tires on for sure. Preston Smith from the Redskins will be a free agent this year. He's very similar to Nick Perry, just a big power rusher. Smith is about 6'3", 265 or so. And then the other guy that I think will be cheaper and could end up being a bit of a steal in this class if you can get him in the right spot would be Shane Ray, the former pass rusher or top 10, formerly mocked in the top 10. I think he went in the 20s to the Broncos. He's a guy that's kind of fizzled in Denver and is the odd man out with Von Miller and Shaq Barrett and the first rounder from last year, Bradley Chubb in Denver. Shane Ray's a guy I think that you could probably get fairly cheap and could be a guy that could really come in and, for the Packers, be a huge boost to that pass rush unit. I'm not going to come out and say he'd be a 10 sack addition or something, but if Shane Ray was your third rusher rather than Reggie Gilbert, I would say the position is pretty massively upgraded without giving up the farm to go get it.
I'll say, Scott, anything else before the Packers, before we head over to some Badger talk?
No. We've got quite a lot of time in the offseason as we get closer to the draft. We'll talk more about that. I mean, the only other piece of it was they were talking today about, trying to retain some of the coaches that are currently on the team. And my opinion on it, and again, it might not be the popular opinion, is I think the new head coach should be the one who decides some of that stuff. never liked when coaches get kind of saddled with coaches that they may not trust or may not want to use. And I think guys like Pettine done a good job with what he with the hand he was dealt. And I wouldn't mind seeing him stay, but I think that decision needs to be, you know, agreed upon by the, whoever the new head coach ends up being. That's my take.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, we'll see how it all plays out coming up. And, of course, playoffs start this weekend leading up to the Super Bowl just a few weeks from now. But on the opposite side, Wisconsin finishes up its year, 2018 Pinstripe Bowl, last week with a win over Miami and a dominant win, one that I did not see coming in a 35-3 victory against and obviously I know some Badger fans are joking about it, but gee, you know, talking about Mark Richt retiring after being beat by the Badgers for the second consecutive time in a postseason game. But it is a, you know, obviously leave, you know, ending the year at 8-5, not where Wisconsin wanted to be after all the preseason hype, college football playoff talk. Talking just, you know, obviously there's a lot of discussion about national championship, you know, discussions, whatnot, that did not come to pass with a young defense and offense that did not live up to expectations. I would say in the passing of the game for the rushing attack, I think it more than anything lived up to its potential, especially with a running back that I think got gypped by going not going to New York. But then again, there are three other really good candidates as well. But I mean, starting with you, Owen, on this, it's what did you make about the game overall with that Pinstripe Bowl? What stood out in just was it to me? It just, I mean, it was a complete effort on both on two of the three sides of the ball phases of the game. I would say special teams wasn't necessarily there, and I know the offense left a couple few things out in there in the first half. But I thought it was the most complete effort by the team this year against a, you know, a good opponent like Miami. But what were your thoughts watching that game?
Man, the first thing I thought was Miami don't want none. They're a team that, and I was talking to a buddy and I was like, yeah, that got out of hand way quicker. And I thought, and I thought he summed it up pretty well, as he's like, it was cold, Miami's soft, whiskey ain't, easy money. And that was kind of the way that I kind of, looking back on the game, Wisconsin jumped on Miami, which I think a lot of people thought Wisconsin would do to a lot of teams this year, with the offensive talent that they theoretically should be able to have at their disposal, with Taylor and the receivers. And as you saw, Jack Cohn hit Kendrick Pryor on a big play early, which I think was a bit of a broken play, but that's neither here nor there. They got a big play in the passing game early and kind of jumped on him, and then they got the turnover quick and scored again, and all of a sudden, boom, 14-0. Miami's up in New York. It's 35 degrees. They're down two touchdowns. You know, their quarterback play is, man, I'd like to see some Badger fans complain about Alex Hornibrook after watching Malik Rozier and Cozy Perry play. Really kind of stymied themselves, or Miami really wasn't able to get anything going offensively, and I think that was a lot in part due to the quarterback play. And then defensively too, it just, with the amount of NFL guys talent that Miami has on their defense, when you look, Joe Jackson will be a pick, Michael Jackson will be a pick, Jaquan Johnson will be a draft pick, Michael Pinckney, Shaq Quarterman, Gerald Willis didn't play, Sheldrick Redwine will be a draft pick. They had a lot of talent on that defensive side of the football, and for them to not, they did, I don't know. I don't, like I said, I don't want to accuse any football team of not showing up or not being motivated or prepared, but that was a game where, holy cow, Miami just didn't have any juice outside of seemingly what was a few tackles for loss, which I know was a big emphasis in the during the game, that Miami is one of the best tackle for loss defenses in the country. And Odenigbo, their D tackle, had two or three tackles for loss, but if you look at the amount of talent and NFL potential and star power that Miami has on that defense, even without their All-American defensive tackle and Gerald Willis, that Wisconsin did not face nearly as much resistance as I had anticipated. And really, for outside of those last, I know Wisconsin got the touchdown to Benshall taken away and stuff with the holding penalty or the chop block,
chop blocker,
but yeah,
and Taylor, yeah.
I, it was the second year in a row, really, where I got a – and I think it's one of those things where I don't think many people saw Mark Richt retiring that quickly. But, like, looking back at it, man, I don't know if that was a suspicion within the program or what the deal was, because it was the second year in a row Miami came out and laid an egg in a bowl game against Wisconsin. Obviously, last year's was more competitive, but it was one of those things where for a team with that much talent and an experienced coach, nonetheless, I mean, Richt hasn't won a national championship or anything, but he's a very good recruiter and he's been around. And for a team to just really not show up like that at all was, I think, a bit odd to me. And obviously, as you see, now he retired and Manny Diaz was able to Josh McDaniels his way back to Miami. And I don't know. It was a bit dumbfounding, to be honest with you. I fully anticipated that being a knockdown, dragout 14-7 game. So when Wisconsin really jumped on him and Miami's quarterback play really inhibited any chance or ability they really had to punch back, it was a bit surprising to me, I guess.
Yeah, I think what stood out to me was what an underrated coach, again, Paul Chryst is nationally. I mean, we know that he gets his teams prepared. But after the type of season that Badgers had, let's face it, a disappointment considering how lofty their sights were and where they were ranked in preseason, and they had their struggles, and yet they came prepared for this game. And it's like, again, I don't want to say, you know, that the Hurricanes weren't, that they quit, but they certainly didn't seem as inspired to go out there and you know, make something of the season yet. I mean, and those kids went out there and they played their hearts out, and that was great. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, they struggled at back position this year. And I read your story, Jake, and hopefully brighter horizons are coming for the quarterback position at Wisconsin. But they played the hand they were dealt, and they were still able to go out there and take it to a Miami team. And that, again, they had a vaunted defense. And kudos to the Badgers for ending their season on a high note and keeping, you know, fans and alumni excited about what's coming next year. So I was surprised. I thought if they were going to win the game, you know, much like you mentioned, I thought it was going to be close. It was going to be ugly. It turned out to be ugly, but very lopsided in favor of the Badgers.
If I can, just one thing before Jake finishes out here. The one thing that really kind of struck a chord to me, and I think what it kind of looked like, Jake and I walked back up to the press box together after the Minnesota game, and we had a bit of a discussion regarding some of the questions and how they were worded and how they were presented to the Badger seniors, which obviously not a great time for them, just lost to their rival for the first time in God knows how long, and a disappointing year, a disappointing end to a disappointing year. Kind of the vibe that I got from watching that football game was that Miami was ready for the year to be done. They didn't have a great year, but they were ready. You know, they were in a bowl game they didn't want to be at, and they're ready to start next year. And I was, as a coach, it's one of those things, especially in high school, even in high school, where I kind of help out at, it's you can't get to fixing anything until the season's done. You can't fix anything in week 12. You got to wait till the off season to get some stuff. So that's kind of the way it appeared to me that Miami was. I think Jake will probably agree here. Michael Dieter and Bo Benshaw and some of those seniors, they weren't ready for their careers to be done yet. So I think that was their opportunity. They could come out and they could make a statement. And Paul Chryst, obviously, like we talked about here, good at getting his team ready to go. But I think that was kind of, to me, this was a chance at some retribution for TJ Edwards and Michael Dieter and Bo Benshaw and some of the seniors that spoke after that Minnesota game. And that was kind of just something I wanted to add quickly, was that I really got that impression that those guys wanted to be in New York and wanted to finish their careers with a win, not with a loss to Minnesota. And it just kind of looked like to me like Miami was ready to get the year done with so they could start for the next year.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, where I think that sour taste in their mouth with losing that axe for the first time in 14 years was really, I mean, you and I were both there and we were just, I think, dumbfounded by the play where Minnesota just was, beat them in every phase of the game. And that was not supposed to happen, what most of us thought and whatnot. So they turned into, you know, they had a dominant win and to end the year on a brighter note than what the rest of the season was. But I mean, you've already started to put together your projected depth charts at, you know, on Bucky's fifth quarter, Owen. You know, we have the offensive one up. We'll get the defensive one up in a day or two. And, you know, and we'll, it's really this year, it's going to be interesting to see where this team goes, you know, in terms of, you know, you lose, you know, David Edwards already declared, as we mentioned earlier, for the NFL draft, foregoing his redshirt senior year. We'll see what that left shoulder, that reported left shoulder injury with the, I think Jeff Patricus mentioned it was like a nerve in there, injury, like how that affects his draft stock. But you know, there's depth at the offensive line that could be seen. Caden Lyles is coming back over from playing defensive tackle. And then it really is going to be, honestly, the biggest position is, you know, Scotty kind of, you know, mentioned it earlier, just Graham Mertz and how does he fit in? He's enrolling early. From what I'm hearing, there are four early enrollees with this class, and that is Graham Mertz. That's what, and then Leo Chanel, Spencer Lytle, all three confirmed with me. And then I heard that Cam Phillips from a couple of the players is enrolling early too, who's a walk on, who's a kind of a steal with that class of 2019. We'll see what Graham Mertz can do. I'm interested in seeing how Spencer Lytle could add some weight and see how he could project out in terms of his play, possibly to help out the outside linebackers. That I'm, after Andrew Van Ginkle's going, I'm wondering how much he'll actually, you know, like how much Zach Bond will take the next leap. Like, but who goes up behind him? Is it Tyler Johnson stepping up? Where I thought he maybe regressed a little bit. You know, it's, is it, I was wondering who else, you know, like could, I guess, you know, that position really step up. But, you know, Mertz is the big name at quarterback, where we're still uncertain about the health of Alex Hornibrook, where, you know, in terms of, you know, he was out for the Pinstripe Bowl with those recurring symptoms from the concussion. We're wondering about, you know, Jack Cohn, can he take another step forward and get more yards per completion or more yards per attempt out of his throws? Does Danny Vandenboom or Chase Wolf have a say in this? And Chase Wolf was, you know, at the end, you know, Jesse Temple talked about Urban Meyer trying to, you know, flip him to Ohio State. So we'll see. You know, I'm still very much, you know, wondering, you know, I'm wondering about it, where, you know, like this team, there's a lot of questions and we'll see what goes forward. But yeah, I don't know where, you know, it's a disappointing year, and with, they have Michigan State and Ohio State next year as crossover games. So it's not going to be an easy schedule. Two of the three are at home, unlike this year where you had Penn State and Michigan on the road. So, you know, I guess I will end it on this one question. Scott, we'll start with you, cause I know you got a jet, and then Owen will end it with, yeah, well, you can slide in after this, but I mean, what's the biggest, you know, improvement that you want to see out of this team in 2019?
Oh, quarterback play. I mean, you know, this offensive line is built to continue to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage. They've always been able to run the ball well. Their defense has a great scheme and they're coached really well. And they're going to have a lot of players who are going to have some experience in the system, but it's been quarterback play. And even when they've had great season, I always feel like the quarterback play is always a variation between mediocre and decent, with the exception of Russell Wilson in the 1 year we had him. Right. So I think it always seems to fall back on that. I mean, and, you know, in fairness, again, we mentioned it, and we don't want to make excuses. The Badgers did lose their best receiving weapon because of off-the-field incidents, and that certainly doesn't help a quarterback. But I just feel like Hornibrook regressed, because I felt like I was the guy defending him more than I probably should have last year when people were coming at him, when they wanted to blame everything, which wasn't the truth, obviously, right? I mean, it's never just all on one guy. But I feel like his decision-making took a step back. And you know, bad throws and bad, you know, mistimed passes and just, like, overall bad decisions, right? So I think it comes down to me, and I hate to be overly simplistic, better quarterback play. You get that, and this team is right back, you know, competing for the Big Ten title, because I think they have the other pieces to do that. And they're certainly coached well enough to do that each and every year. So I think it's just, again, with the risk of sounding, you know, overly simplistic about it, they just got to be better at quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to say, quarterback's, I think, 1B for me. And Scotty, do you need to sign off now, by the way?
Yeah, I probably have. So I think I'll end it on that note right there.
All right. That was good talking to you, brother. We'll do another show coming up next week for sure. And in safe travels, brother, in the snow and the weather there in Milwaukee. But Owen, you know, he mentioned quarterback. I think it's 1B. To me, it's defensive line. Just with the way that they, I mean, I think you saw, and I've beat a dead horse about it the entire year, talking about how much of a loss those three senior defensive ends meant to this team. And then with Olivier Sangapolu's injury, it was tough sledding for that group. But what's the position, you know, what's the one thing that you want to see out of the, you know, Wisconsin to improve upon heading into 2019?
Yeah, I was going to say the defensive line or the pass rush, to me, I think that's a huge thing. That's something that Badger fans have probably taken for granted since they made that switch to the 3-4. They've had Joe Schobert and Vince Beagle and TJ Watt and Garrett Dooley and Leon Jacobs and now Andrew Van Ginkle at 6 NFL level defenders. And obviously, I would probably venture to say that Van Ginkle and Dooley and Jacobs are probably lower, at least in the college football spectrum, and probably NFL potential as well, as we've seen with Schobert and TJ Watt obviously doing well in Pittsburgh. But I think that's the biggest thing, is when the Badgers, the way their scheme is set up, their defensive line is never going to be the caveat in pass rush, right? So they're more so meant there to occupy blockers, and they can. Alec James had 5 sacks, and they can do I think you actually had more than that, but they can get the occasional pressure. But the way the defense is schemed is that the weak side rusher and the other outside linebacker are the primary pass rushers, the primary blitzers. And this year, as you saw, it just wasn't there. Van Ginkle being hurt half the year didn't help. Zach Bond really coming off of a season ender the year before as well. So he was kind of knocking the rust off there. And then obviously we talked with Tyler Johnson. He's a fine player, former walk-on and high school quarterback. There's just not a lot of juice there as a pass rusher. Christian Bell, we haven't seen a ton of him, but I think that's the thing that really needs to improve. If you really want to run this 3-4 defense, you really want to run this scheme, and with a secondary that's extremely talented, but for the second year in a row next year will not lose one corner due to graduation, you need to help them out as much as you can. Fayon Hicks, Rashad Wildgoose, both got hit throughout the year, being a little grabby, playing a bit like Nick Nelson was able to do. However, when the ball is being forced to come out quicker and you're getting that pass rush, it obviously helps them a good bit. So pass rush, and then obviously, yeah, quarterback goes without saying at this point. And I agree with you. The defensive line is huge. They're playing with a walk-on and an offensive lineman for most of the season in the starting lineup, which is incredible to me, really, that you're able to win 8 games that way. But nonetheless, they'll be getting their 2 starters back this year, and really then you'll be able to see guys like Matt Henningsen come off the bench and be a sub package run guy, or whatever, however you want to do that, a much more advantageous position for him. Let Loudermilk and Rand take the reins there. And I think you'll see them, along with the additions along the defensive line, especially Keanu Benton and Gio Paez, getting looks inside with Bryson Williams. I think you'll see some more juice along that defensive line, and definitely more depth, which is something that Wisconsin was at a desperation level of throughout most of the year. So yeah, I think that's probably it. Yeah, pass rush, quarterback, and then defensive line. And I think if you handle that, Wisconsin's really back in the catbird seat pretty quick. Yeah,
no, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Tyler Biadasz if he comes back. He is still, as he told reporters after the game, after the Pinstripe Bowl, that he's undecided. We'll see what happens with Wisconsin. You know, I mean, overall, just I think there's depth at the O-line. Running back's fine. Wide receiver, I think, will be okay too. And tight end, I mean, there's still, I think it's still more pieces on defense. I just want to see that maturity. And also seeing Garrett Rand, I think, come back will be huge. And if him and Loudermilk can stay healthy, I think that line next year could be pretty good, outside of finding them a reserve defense, you know, just this reserve nose tackle to back up Bryson Williams too. So on that note, you know, we've run a little long for Bucky's Fifth Podcast. You and I will probably, you know, if you're around sometime in the next week or so, you and I will do a recap of the season if you'd like, brother. But yeah, we'll wrap it up from here. Appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. It's a good time as always. an exciting time. Like I said, I mentioned in that depth chart piece with the signing day and the bowl game being successful, it definitely leaves that good taste in your mouth heading into the off season and makes the next 8 months hopefully go by a little quicker than it would have with a bludgeoning like Miami took. So it's kind of one of those things where heading into you're excited to see the draft prospects from Wisconsin go do their thing. It sucks to see them go. As you and I have both experienced a lot of good kids, a lot of fun interviews out of that group, but the bright future's ahead for them and start to get a paint the picture and get a little better look at what next year's Badger team's
going to look absolutely. Like. And that, yeah. And we'll see what the future looks like too. Cause you have coming up Graham Mertz and Logan Brown in the 2019 All-American Bowl. And that's on Saturday at noon. Is it noon or 11? It's sometime. So yeah, it's on Saturday and that'll be on NBC. So I'll be watching that. And then also Blake Wilcox, the walk-on kicker. We just had an article published this afternoon on Bucky's fifth quarter. The lone member of Wisconsin's class that's participating in the Under Armour All-American game, which is tomorrow, 5 p.m. on ESPN2. Make sure you guys check that out. So, check out some of the future there. And well, you know, looks like we'll talk more coming up on both Bucky's fifth quarter and the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza as we continue to move along now to draft season. And obviously you and I will probably both be there for Pro Day coming up in March, which is already just a couple months away. So, and you'll be down there in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. And obviously there'll be a lot of Badgers to talk to as well.
Yep. At least three of them. And I'm still surprised that TJ Edwards didn't get an invite. I wouldn't be surprised to see him be an injury alternate or something along those lines. But yep, for sure, definitely excited to see Dieter and Benshall and Alec Ingold down in the only fullback on either roster down in Mobile. So should be a good time. I'm excited for the better weather. And like I said, that southern food, man. I'm ready. Waiting.
On that note, we'll end it from here, guys. Make sure you guys check out Bucky's fifth quarter at B5Q. Owen on Twitter at ReeseDraft, R-I-E-S-E Draft, me at JCocoB5Q, and Scott, I don't know if he uses it still, but Scott Wisniewski 2. And then also check out Bucky's fifth quarter, like us, you know, like on Facebook and whatnot too. And we'll catch you guys next week. You guys be good and be safe on the roads and safe travels. Have a good start to the new year. And Wisconsin takes on Minnesota tomorrow night at the Kohl Center. I'll be down there. So make sure you guys check out Bucky's fifth quarter for all your Wisconsin Badgers news, notes, and analysis for not just football, but also basketball, women's hockey, volleyball, you name it. We try to cover it. So y'all be well. You guys take care. We'll talk to you soon on the next time at the Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza.